Fantasy
This is the fourth of four episodes running down positionally from quarterback to running back to wide receiver and now tight end, how these players did based on average draft position this past summer. It is not about just running down what happened, but it's also trying to make sense of how this influences our thinking ahead of 2026. There are patterns that develop. There are actually, there's context to the stats, and sometimes people will mistake the stats, and I'll get to that in a moment. For tight ends, we're going through the top 30 tight ends this preseason. What happened? Starting with the top five, Brock Bowers, Trey McBride, George Kittle, Sam Laporta, Travis Kelce. What jumps out? The top three are currently the top three in fantasy points per game through week 17. That is fascinating. It is unusual in the modern kind of fantasy NFL. Not so unusual if we look back a mini generation to the heyday of Travis Kelce and Zach Ertz and George Kittle, and even, you know, a little bit of Dallas Goedert, where you'd have guys at the top or near the top, and pretty consistently, if you would go elite, if you could get an elite tight end, and if you couldn't, you would just wait. Because getting, you know, the eighth best tight end, ninth best tight end probably wasn't going to help you very much. But if you can get one of those top three, you were golden. In this case, that strategy would have worked. I think for the first time in maybe almost a decade. Maybe 8 years, something like that. The next, but then Sam Laporta gets hurt. Travis Kelce fading. What else can you say? I mean, that's the 4 and 5 didn't work out. Laporta might be okay next year, but we'll see. It's been a rough couple of seasons since his breakout rookie campaign. And Kelce might not even be back. And even if he is, what do you expect from a guy who I think will be 37 next year? What can you possibly expect in that crowded offense with a tight end who probably will be on his last leg? 6 through 10, this is the example of why you don't just settle for a tight end because there's a run on tight ends. From starting at 6, T.J. Hockenson, Mark Andrews, Evan Engram, David Njoku, Tyler Warren. All busts instead, except Warren. Njoku was okay at the start of the season until he got hurt. Engram and Hockenson and Andrews never really caught on. I talked about Hockenson before. The Baltimore passing attack outside of Zay Flowers was a complete mess. And Engram, in his 30s, is kind of, at this point, more a presence on the field at 31 years old than he is someone who can be a, you know, a game changer in fantasy. That's putting it politely. Tyler Warren did fine. The challenge with Tyler Warren is there's a lot of mouths to feed. And the quarterback situation took a huge hit when Daniel Jones got hurt. For a while there, Tyler Warren looked like the overall TE1 or maybe even the TE2. And then down the stretch, starting in week 14, he averaged only about 5.5, 6 fantasy points a game. That's not going to cut it. And even in weeks 12 and 13, though 2 games before that, he averaged barely 10 fantasy points per game. And if you look at the 3 games before that, he averaged maybe 11 or 12. But those first 7 games, he more or less crushed it. He had double digits in 6 of those games, and he looked to be the real deal, the guy who was drafted in the first round by the Colts to be an instant impact player and, by extension, for our purposes, an instant impact fantasy performer. Didn't quite work out. He does have a promising future. In Dynasty, you could probably trade relatively low because there are so many good young tight ends. You could make the case that Tyler Warren might not be elite for many years, but we both know there's a strong possibility that in the next 2 years, he could be the next Brock Bowers. Then we get into, now we get into 11 through 15, fascinating group. Tucker Kraft, Colson Loveland, Dalton Kincaid, Jake Ferguson, Kyle Pitts. Ferguson was hot early, faded dramatically. Tucker Kraft gets hurt, we'll push him aside. Dalton Kincaid also got hurt. I'm waiting for Kincaid to break through. He was the first tight end drafted 3 or 4 years ago. I expected him to be the guy. Dawson Knox is still looming. And even in the receiving core that was leaning on guys like Gabe Davis and Tyrell Shavers and others, it's still, even when Kincaid was on the field, there was this sense of, he could be so much more. Now, that said, he was the TE13 in fantasy points per game. there is breakout potential. The issue in that Bills offense right now is consistency, and without consistency, he's not a reliable guy to draft. That's just the way it goes. Colston Loveland, crowded core. That's the best I can say about that. He was the TE18 in fantasy points per game. He is better than that. He has higher upside than that. It's just there's a lot of mouths to feed there. Kraft could have been great this year if he'd stayed healthy. And Pitts, we all know, basically invisible. And then he completely goes bananas. And I talked about this on the blog or the podcast or both, which is that when he is the alpha, going back to college, when Kyle Pitts is the alpha, he is amazing. When there is an alpha wide receiver that he's playing with, Pitts fades to the background. It is a fascinating situation. And when Drake London got hurt, Pitts stepped up. It was like magic. Except it's not magic. It's the nature of Kyle Pitts. And so he is a near elite tight end in terms of fantasy points. But we know, looking beyond that, he is boom bust and generally bust unless he goes to a team next year where there is no strong number one wide receiver. And then he might be the guy, but there's very few places he can go where that's going to happen. Moving on to 16 to 20, we've got Dallas Goedert, Johnny Smith, Zach Ertz, Hunter Henry, Isaiah Likely. Now, when I was drafting in the Premier Fantasy Football League, I was looking at Pitts and Goddard. I decided, okay, I'm not going to get an elite guy, and I didn't really want an elite wide receiver. If one fell in my lap, I was going to take it, but I wasn't itching for one. I was just going to wait. And Pitts and Goddard were the two guys that I was targeting as potentially undervalued breakout candidates. I went with Goddard, was very happy I did. Aside from his age and injury history, he's one of the best red zone guys in the league, you know, tight ends in the league. And for many years, I don't know if he still is, but for many years, he was one of the best after-the-catch tight ends in the league. That is a great combination to have. And that is why you don't just rush and get the 8th or 9th or 10th best tight end unless you think they can be top 7, top 6, top 5. Then maybe it's worth it. But if you're not sure, just wait. Get a guy with one of your last picks and then see if he's top 5, top 6, top 7. If so, you got a bargain. Johnny Smith, just a crowded tight end core, so it didn't really materialize. His breakout the year before or 2 years earlier, whatever it was, where he finally came through, seemed to be more or less a one-time thing. We'll see. But he's at his age now. He's running out of time. He'll be 31 next August to be fantasy relevant ever again. The remaining guys in that grouping, Zach Ertz, much better than I expected. I devoted a podcast episode this summer about Ertz. Could not see how he could be relevant in that offense at his age. What was he, 33, I think, this year? He turned 35 this year. Did not see it. He proved me wrong. He was the TE17 in fantasy points per game, but that didn't do it justice. There were some games when he really, really helped fantasy managers. I think he had 6 or 7 games with double-digit fantasy points. That's all you could ask for a guy who was essentially undraftable. Hunter Henry also did not see that coming. He was the TE14, had some huge, huge performances. And for an ADP of TE19, that's pretty good. Isaiah Likely, complete bust, and he'll never be the guy that some managers want him to be until Mark Andrews is out of the picture. Now we get into 21 through 25. And the one name out of this group is Brenton Strange. It took a while. Strange obviously got hurt, and that didn't help. Trevor Lawrence was hit or miss, more hit down the stretch, and Brenton Strange was hit or miss. He somehow averaged, or maybe not averaged, I don't know what he averaged, but most of his games he had at least 5 targets, and I think about half his games he had 6+. That's not bad for a guy who is in a crowded receiving core. He only had 2 scores. There's room to grow there. The challenge for Strange longer term, and the challenge for any tight end in a crowded receiving core, and Travis Kelce fits the bill, even though Kelce has the longevity and the history and the all-time greatness, where I shouldn't even lump him and Strange in the same sentence, but I am, because there are a lot of mouths to feed in Kansas City, and Kelce was just one of them. This was really the first year where he was just one of the mouths to feed. And Strange is the same case in Jacksonville. So it's risky to have someone like that. But what I liked about Goddard and what I liked about Pitts is that they had the chance to be, realistic chance of being, a top three or top four offensive playmaker on their respective teams. That's what you want out of a bargain tight end. Finally, Pat Freiermuth, hit or miss. Darren Waller, injured, hit or miss. I know that some people chased points with him. It didn't work out. Kate Otten, disappointed. I thought Kate Otten would be better, even in a crowded tight end core, because the injuries were starting to pile up. Otten never really stepped up in the ways that he had in years past, where he might be Baker Mayfield's number one target. Wasn't the case this time around, even with depleted receivers. And finally, 26 through 30, Chig Okonkwo for Tennessee, Mason Taylor, Dalton Schultz, Elijah Arroyo, and Harold Fannin. I want to talk about Fannin very briefly. The rookie, he and Njoku were kind of going toe-to-toe until Njoku got hurt, and then Fannin took off. That's the big takeaway for Fannin. If you look at his fantasy points per game, he's the TE10. And next year, I think his ADP will probably be around 12, 13, 14, something like that. He's not going to be as good because, assuming Njoku is still in the picture and Cleveland still has most of their receivers, and a weird kind of quarterback situation where we're not really sure who's going to be the quarterback for most of the season, Fannin's going to be a guy who, you know, be a fringe starter, some great weeks, some off weeks. The big takeaway with Fannin is, with Njoku off the field, Fannin stepped up in part because of a larger target share in some games. He had two of his biggest targeted games with Njoku off the field, but also he scored in four of his last five games. If you're scoring, that changes everything. I know that I've said this before. It is not fair for me to downplay the importance of scoring, because scoring is 6 points for a receiver, and they've earned that. And you've earned that as a fantasy manager. But, this is the big but, scoring often comes at the expense of other players. So Fannin getting 4 touchdowns in that offense came at the expense of other guys who might have otherwise scored inside the red zone, for example. And so if you look at the 24 points that Fannin had in these final 5 weeks, that accounts for, based on 24 points just based on touchdowns, that accounts for roughly a third of his total fantasy production in those games, in those final 5 games. That goes from him being a good, good starter some weeks and a non-starter other weeks to being a good starter every week. And so going into next season, just understand, if he's not scoring every other game, are you really going to get the kind of value for Fannin that you're looking for based on what he did at the end of the season? Arroyo, too crowded there in Seattle with the tight end core. Dalton Schultz, just a weird passing attack in Houston where guys just underwhelmed. Nico Collins did fine, as I talked about in yesterday's podcast. But everyone else is kind of, it's kind of a weird young offense mixed in with a guy like Dalton Schultz, who's going on 30 next year, who seems to be oh so close to being fantasy relevant and then just disappears. And that's really hard to trust, even in a guy who's that far down in ADP. Mason Taylor never materialized. Blame that on the Jets offense. Blame it on his development, whatever it is. Okonkwo in Tennessee never really had much of a chance in that offense. He finished around where his ADP was. And Gesicki is Gesicki. I think he is what he is. He's a desperation streamer pretty much every week. The guys who are outside the top 30, and I'll leave it at this, Terrence Ferguson, the rookie tight end for the Rams, great dynasty add, with the understanding that Tyler Higbee is getting on in years and injury-prone increasingly. Colby Parkinson is not a long-term answer. Ferguson has a chance to break through. He was the TE34 as a rookie this summer. He has a chance to break through. Juwan Johnson was the TE37. He turned out, he's right now the TE12 in fantasy points per game. He was one of the big winners. In a very deep league or in best ball, you take a guy like Juwan Johnson, who's the number one tight end for New Orleans, and he happens to have a TE37 ADP, that screams buy. Theo Johnson, similarly, but not really, the TE38 just behind Juwan Johnson, kind of stepped up when healthy as a number one tight end for the Giants. Luke Musgrave is fascinating. If he goes to another team, I'll be higher on Musgrave. As long as he's playing behind Tucker Kraft, it's going to be hard for him to break through unless Kraft gets hurt. It's a crowded receiving core. But don't sleep on guys like longer-term Luke Musgrave, number 42 ADP this year, or Michael Mayer, 46 ADP. Both guys can be streamers if their starters go down or if they go to another team where they're the starter. And finally, Rhondae Gadsden, one of the toughest guys to figure out. Maybe you blame the Chargers offense as a whole. He had a TE52 ADP as a rookie. I picked him up the Sunday before he broke out, and I thought I was smart. And then he had a good game, but not as great the following week. And then he did nothing. There you go. That was Rhondae Gadsden in a nutshell. He was kind of like Kyle Pitts, but not as consistently okay. It's going to be tough for him next year to be any more reliable in what should still be a pretty crowded receiving core, unless Keenan Allen is not back. In which case, there's an opening for someone like Gadsden to be the number five offensive playmaker, which isn't that bad for a streaming tight end. We've got three podcast episodes left, and I promise to make them as interesting to me as possible. And hopefully, if they're interesting to me, they'll be interesting to you. Please leave a review if you enjoy this podcast. I'm BJ Riddell, Fantasy Football for Winners. Follow me on the blog. Email me anytime. We'll see you tomorrow.